Welcome to Strange Phenomena, the music of Kate Bush. I am Cecily, and this week we're going to be talking about a cover song. So Kate Bush hasn't recorded many cover songs, but not only did she do a cover of the song, but it was also a charting hit in the UK. We're going to be talking about a song that she recorded for a compilation, her cover of Elton John's Rocket Man. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the show. I'm Cecily, and this week we're talking about Rocket Man. So Kate Bush doesn't do many cover songs, but when she does, they're usually very her and very interesting to talk about, especially on this one this week. This was recorded for a compilation album and was released in 1990, so it was that kind of that area right after The Sensual World, but before Red Shoes. But I'm still considering this part of this era because also like her vocal styling and everything is very much of The Sensual World era. So that's the song we're going to be talking about this week. Our guest is none other than Diego Ortega, who has been on the show before. And when I recorded this with him, it was quite a while ago, and I noticed something as I was editing. So if you hear a kind of a constant, very low frequency buzz throughout some of the episode, I do apologize. When I was recording this, I had my microphone too close to some of the other electrical wires that I use for recording music, and I didn't know that the buzzing was there until after I went to go and edit the episode. So I do apologize. I've tried to get it out as much as I can, but if I do too much, then it's going to sound like I'm talking it from a tin can, and we don't really want that. So anyway, letting you know if you hear that in the episode. Hopefully not. I've tried to try to take it out as much as possible. But all right, so with that out of the way, without further ado, let's get into the episode. So here was my discussion of Rocket Man with Kate Bush fan Diego Ortega, who, as I said, has been on the show before, and he said this was one of his favorite Kate Bush songs. So here we go. And with me to talk about the song this week is someone who has been on the show before, and he is none other than...
Hi, I'm Diego.
Indeed. We're calling our own Rocket Man here, all the way out in
boy.
I mean, there's going to be no avoiding it with this.
There's no avoiding it. I'm gonna reference it throughout the episode. I know
me
you're
too.
Going to.
Because I'm one of those people that if you know me personally, like, I will reference song lyrics all the time. And whether or not people
me
actively
too.
Know it, and if they don't, then I go like, okay, well, let me tell you about this song of blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. And oh, I you haven't like, heard the Modern Lovers? Let's talk about the Modern Lovers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm the same way.
Or anytime somebody, you know, tells somebody to let's dance, I go, let's dance. Come on, let's put on your red blue shoes and dance the red shoes and dance the blues. So we're here to talk about Kate Bush's cover version that was also as a single, although she had recorded it some 2 years before, but putting this in with the Sensual World era. It came out on a compilation that I actually used to have a copy of. It was called Two Rooms. And it was a compilation of many different artists doing their versions of various Elton John songs. And I know on that album there was Sting. I forget what Sting did. There were lots of other people on there.
I have the CD.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah. So I know the most notable ones are the Beach Boys doing Crocodile Rock and Tina Turner doing The Bitch Is Back.
See, I never got past just Kate's version. I had this compilation at some point, and then I sold it. And that's got to be interesting, Tina Turner doing The Bitch Is Back.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, and I think The Who... Oh, I believe The Who did Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting.
Yep, I'm looking at the... It was a 1991 tribute album, and the title refers to a song on John's album 21 at 33, Two Rooms at the End of the World. And Kate's version of Rocket Man was released as a single and did pretty well. It reached number 12 in the UK, did number 2 in Australia. And I find that also the kind of what she has said about the song also to be really interesting about why she picked it. But first of all, what do we think of... Do we want to talk about what we think of the cover and everything before we get into, the other story behind the song? Or how do we want to do this?
Yeah. I think... I'm worried that I'm going to share a lot of unpopular opinions throughout this episode. So I apologize in advance. I don't know the consensus about people's feelings about this song, but I like the Kate Bush version way better.
So I've heard the original, and we were talking before I pressed record that both of us have heard the original, and I know for me, I grew up on a lot of Elton's music from it being played on soft rock radio, and especially a lot of his 70s songs. So I heard a lot of Rocket Man. I heard a lot of A Candle in the Wind, especially when he redid that song and made it about Princess Diana, because I remember I was 12 years old when that happened. So I grew up on a lot of his music, and I remember his music standing out to me because it was very piano-based, which I know was something that Kate has said about why she picked this song because what Elton's music means to her. I like her version better as well, and there's actually something really interesting she has said about this, and there's a particular reason why I like this version better than the original. She says here, it was just that I wanted to do it differently. This is from a BBC One radio interview. She said, I wanted to do it differently. I do think that if you cover records, you should try and make them different. It's like remaking movies. You got to try and give it something that makes it worth re-listening. And the reggae treatment just seemed to happen, really. I just tried to put the chords together on the piano, and it just seemed to want to take off in the choruses. So we gave it the reggae treatment. And her saying that when you do a cover version that you should do something differently with it, that is what I love about her version of Rocket Man, that she takes, she completely makes it, she sings it like it's her own song. She's not doing a straight karaoke version. I mean, we know that Kate would never would do that kind of thing anyway.
No.
But it's her, she puts these two things together, this reggae kind of lilt and then the Ilium pipes. They shouldn't work together, but they do.
But they do. So well.
So okay. I love that Kate really makes the song her own. And I like the original. It has cool childhood memories attached to it for me of listening to soft rock radio with my parents. But I like her take on it because it's just so different and weird, and you don't think that it would work, and it does. How about you?
Yeah. So that quote just reminded me about all the reasons why I love this song and why I love Kate Bush's covers in general. I assume that soon after this episode, there will be an episode about another cover in particular.
Yep.
May I say its name?
Yes, you may.
Sexual healing.
Oh, see, I thought you were going to go for Candle in the Wind.
Oh, no, yeah. I was... Oh, no, no, I was in her cover, but the Red Shoes cover, or the Red Shoes era cover of Marvin Gaye.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I yeah, that one, oh, yeah, that one is really interesting. Okay, I'll put you down for that.
I planned to. I just realized, I just re-remember that song. It's a great cover. But Kate Bush, like another artist who this album reminds me of, Brian Ferry, knows how to do a cover really, really well. And I think for me, what really stands out is the mixing of traditional English instruments and reggae approach, the ukulele.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we're dancing in the ukulele in the video is so cute. Oh my God.
I know. That's something I think about all the time, and it always makes my day.
I'm doing it right now. You can't see me, but I'm like, I think it's gonna be a long, long time.
No. Oh, God. and also, this cover reminds me of the John Peel session version of This Charming Man by the Smiths, which sounds like it's centered around the ukulele or something different than a typical electric or acoustic guitar, and it's more cheerful, but not like deluded by the happiness. It's like a really interesting juxtaposition. Like in this song, there's a juxtaposition of feelings, of tones, of sonic approaches, and I think it really makes it an experience. It's not just listening to a song, but you feel different things, and I think she wants you to do such, like with the video, as we'll talk about later, I think it's really well conceived cover.
Mm-hmm. You can tell that she put a lot of thought into how she was going to make it her own, how she was going to sing it, which instrument was going to come in here, which instrument's going to come in there. Definitely.
The pantsuit. I made a joke. I said the pantsuit.
Oh.
The cool outfits in the video.
Oh yeah. And also love her hair too. Her hair is like because I've noticed that this era that she starts to look in like few pictures you've ever seen of Kate and her mother. Now for who's played on the song, she has her usual drummer and her usual guitar player. Drums are from Charlie Morgan. Guitar is from Alan Murphy. And then there's Del Palmer on the bass. He's definitely there in the video. Mm-hmm. And then there's on the concertina, so it's like an accordion, is Alistair mm-hmm. Anderson. And then the Ilium pipes is Davey Spillane, who has played on the Sensual World title track in this era, and he's been on a few of her other songs, so playing the Ilium pipes. I noticed, speaking of Alan Murphy in the video, I noticed this today, that there are a couple of shots where when they show the band playing and she's doing her ukulele dance, if you look in the back to where the drummer is, on the chair there's a guitar.
Yeah.
And then it'll show that chair with the guitar, and then there's a candle there. That is supposed mm-hmm. to represent Alan Murphy, because he had died before the song came out. And so they did that as a tribute to him. And I also think that's like a little wink there with the candle. And it looks like the flame is blowing in the wind, you know, candle in the wind.
Mm-hmm. So that's what I was referencing when I said that she's really trying to contrast many feelings and attitudes throughout the song, because her take on the song is inherently joyful sonically, and there's a feeling of celebration in the video, but it's also contrasted with the nature of the song, some of the instruments, and the imagery in honor of Alan Murphy. Is he also referenced in Moments of Pleasure?
Yep, when she says Smurf playing his guitar refrain. That is Alan Murphy, yep. Because he had died of AIDS in the late 80s, early 90s. Like one of her other dancers as well, one of the dancers who is with her on the tour of life, Gary Hurst, died also of AIDS in the early 90s as well. So, yeah, and speaking of, like, the lyrics, I never really, like, stopped to look at, like, what the song is about, really. But, you know, you're right, yeah. She brings up, but it they're actually kind of sad.
Yeah, I don't know what, I don't know what Elton John and Bernie Taupin were, really trying to convey while writing the lyrics. I feel like it's a song that we don't really talk, like, in pop culture, talk about lyrically, like, mm-hmm. other than, like, the lyrics at face value. Yet, at face value, there's also just apparent senses of melancholy and longing.
So, actually, the lyrics, the song was inspired by the short story, The Rocket Man, in The Illustrated Man by Ray Bradbury, and echoes the theme of Space Oddity. Both recordings were produced by Gus Dudgeon. But according to an account in Elizabeth Rosenthal's book, His Song, The Musical Journey of Elton John, the song was inspired by Taupin's sighting of either a shooting star or a distant aeroplane. The song describes a Mars-bound astronaut's mixed feelings at leaving his family in order to do his job. Rosenthal's account goes on to relate that the notion of astronauts no longer being perceived as heroes, but in fact as an everyday occupation, led Taupin to the song's opening lines, "She packed my bags last night, pre-flight, 0 hour, 9 a.m., and I'm going to be high as a kite by then."
Yeah, and thinking of Ray Bradbury, who, I read a bunch of his short stories an early teenager, just amazing. They're more, science fiction with an emphasis on the realities of post-war and postmodern life and the absurdity of life at that time. I think the reduction of the grandeur of being an astronaut to reducing it to everyday occupation really echoes that and creates a not like totally gutting but a unnerving feeling.
And then you contrast that with the kind of happy sounding music, and it makes an interesting juxtaposition. The Bray Bradbury story that I remember most is All Summer in a Day. Did you ever read that one?
I believe so. Could you remind me about it?
Yeah, sure. It is about it's about humans who have made their way to Venus. And on Venus, it rains for 7 years, and then it's sunny for an hour or something, and then it goes back to being rainy. Well, there's a girl it's in an elementary school class. Her name is Margot, and she was originally from Earth. And so she tells stories about having grown up on Earth and getting to see the sun and knowing the seasons. And the other kids really don't like her. And on the day that the rains are supposed to stop, they stuff her in a closet while they all go out to play. And then the story ends with them opening the closet where they've stuffed her. And there's a movie version. I remember some filmed version of that story where they show them opening the closet and her coming out and her being really sad. And that story, I remember because that was just haunting to me, that this, the way that she was treated, and that to be stuck in a place where it just rains and rains for 7 years. It was that one. And that's the one I remember the most. And I know if I had been in AP English that we would have read Fahrenheit 451, but I never got to read that one. But I knew of it because I had friends who were a little bit, they were a year or two ahead of me. And so they were in AP English and they would tell me a little bit about it. That's the story I remember.
I read it.
Okay. It's, yeah. I feel like it's a pretty common one. I think it's in like one of those, like those big textbooks that the teachers give you, like, okay, we're going to work our way through these stories in here. You know?
Actually, I just forgot the name, but, All Summers in a Day, that's the short story that got me hooked on Ray Bradbury.
Really?
In seventh grade.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So, that and, A Sound of Thunder, all these different stories and how they're not fantastical. They don't take you away from reality. They harp on reality and they're really haunting. And mm-hmm. I think that, I mean, that's a feeling that's found in the lyrics here. So mm-hmm. I think knowing that, it really makes the song as well. As well as the cover, really interesting, because now there's that layer on top of all the juxtapositions that Kate's creating. It speaks to the quote that you noted earlier.
And something else that she said about the song too is like kind of how talking a little bit about how she got involved with the project. This is actually from the same interview. She says, I was really knocked out to be asked to be involved with this project because I was such a big fan of Elton's when I was little. I really loved his stuff. It's like he's my biggest hero, really. And when I was just starting to write songs, he was the only songwriter I knew of that played the piano and sang and wrote songs. So he was very much my idol, and one of my favorite songs of his was Rocket Man. Now, if I had known then that I would have been asked to be involved in this project, I would have just died. They basically said, would we like to be involved? I could choose which track I wanted. Rocket Man was my favorite, and I hoped it hadn't gone, actually. I hoped no one else was going to do it. I actually haven't heard the original for a very long time. A long, long time, she laughs. And then later in that same quote, it's even more extraordinary that the song was a hit because we actually recorded the track over 2 years ago, probably just after my last telly appearance. We were quite astounded when they wanted to release it as a single just recently. Yeah, hearing her like talking about him, what Elton's music means to her, and yet she gets to sing with him later. He's on Snowden at Wheeler Street and all that.
Oh, God.
And, you know, I have to say, finally when Humming was released, that song reminds me of something that Elton John would have written. It's like the key changes and a little bit of like the way the melody is going sounds quite a bit like him. Like I get like serious Tiny Dancer vibes from that song.
I was going to ask about where you see Elton's influence throughout her career. I would say, and maybe. I mean, I was raised on Elton John, but not as heavily as more alternative, like later 70s, but mostly 80s stuff. But Under the Ivy reminds me of something. I might be wrong, just because as the piano at center stage, but Under the Ivy, just the feeling, the tone, and the songwriting kind of reminds me of something like Elton John would do. More mellow, but I don't know.
I can see when I think about like what his influence has been on her, I feel like it's the main thing I hear is in a little bit in her earlier music when she was more piano based, like around the Kick Inside and the Lionheart era, when those songs were written with just her at the piano, and then when she went to go record them in the studio, that then all the other musicians came in to add their own touches to it.
But
I feel like it's, you hear it a little bit in some of her earlier music, especially with some of the more unusual key changes and chord changes that she has, like in something like even in something like Moving. In that first few lines, like if you look at the sheet music, that she starts in D minor and then she like inserts, like I think there's an A major chord in there too. That's like things that don't usually go together. I hear it in that and a little bit of the theatricality. I mean, she wasn't to the extent that he was, like, you know, he was like, okay, he's coming out in like a big feathery chicken costume, or like,
whoa. Okay, Tour of Life. With all the costume changes and the intricate, like, performances for each song. But then again, it's not like Elton John, whose stage middle name is Hercules. Because Elton John is the capital T theatrical, along with Genesis era Peter Gabriel. But I was gonna say I definitely see the theatricality in Moving and Ode to Be in Love. Also, I see that approach that you're talking about, focusing on the piano first in songs like "Oh England, My Lionheart" and "Peter Pan," as well as The Man with a Child in His Eyes.
Oh, that one, like, it's that one even in the section, you know, and Here I Am Again, My Girl, Wondering What on Earth I'm Doing Here. She's actually doing, like, chromatics. Like, she's going, like, da-da-da-da-da-da. Like, she's, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, and that is totally, like, that's something that I would expect to hear a little bit of from, a little bit from Elton John's music.
Yeah, like, the meandering in tone and like how it like changes constantly, right?
Yeah.
The thing I wanted to know, and this is my real unpopular opinion, so I apologize. As we were saying earlier about why we love this cover, I really have realized with newer outputtings by Elton John that I like his voice now more than ever. I feel like his, and which is weird because Elton John, like, his career spans like almost 50 years, but he's a songwriting and singing legend. How I think his voice now, and this is something like highlighted by Snowden at Wheeler Street, It's more it's deeper, it's more talking about melancholy. I just feel like it's more moving. I don't know. No, I love Elton John. I'm not trying to talk bad. It's just but you know what I mean about his voice now, right?
Yeah, because, and actually, in his case, what happened was he started blowing out his voice from a lot of the drinking and the drugs, and also constant touring that he was doing. And he had vocal cord surgery in the late 80s or early 90s. And so he had these little growths removed from his vocal cords due to misuse. So nodes. And so he got those removed, and then he started learning how to take proper care of his voice. And then by then he was, by the 90s, he was, in his 50s, and everybody's voice is going to change when you hit your 50s, men or women.
Yeah.
You notice it more with women, apparently, than you do with men. But because he had vocal cord surgery, then his voice, and just naturally aging, that's why his voice is a little bit, I agree. I like his voice better now, too. When I was listening to the original of Rocket Man, I like his voice. I can tell it's him, but he's much more of a high tenor, whereas now he's more like a baritone, kind of in the middle.
Elton John was on a recent song, a Gorilla song that just dropped a couple weeks ago, and that's what really made me think about this, because it's maybe I just, when it comes to male singers, I like smooth but weird voices, Martin Fry of ABC and Brian Ferry. Think that's also
nothing wrong with that. I like the distinctive male vocal voices as well. One of my favorite voices, I love Sting's voice. I can tell him within a millisecond that that's him singing. I can always tell. Peter Gabriel, I could tell within 2 seconds, less than that.
I love Peter, yeah. And that's how I feel about Dave Gahan.
Oh, yeah, Depeche Mode.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've been listening to a lot of Depeche Mode.
Oh, Depeche Mode.
I mean, since childhood, but now more than ever, I've been listening to just live versions and just,
We're going to have to talk off mic about that, because, I'm a huge Depeche Mode fan.
I know you're a huge Depeche Mode fan.
Oh, yes.
I am, too. So, the two main versions of the song that I know of are the music. They're probably the same version, but different cases. The music video and then the performance on Wogan.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Is it the same, just...
One of them was the kind of the official music video, which apparently only aired, or either it never aired or only aired very rarely, and was because it was a big deal that it was being released on Kate Bush's channel a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
There is a black and white music video. That's Verna. That's one that I remember seeing long, long time ago. I didn't realize it was hardly ever seen. Filmed with her band.
I saw it before.
As a simple performance video. And apparently the reason that she's playing a ukulele is a tribute to Marilyn Monroe and Some Like It Hot. I did not realize that.
I saw some comments about that, but I wasn't really, comments referencing that, but I didn't know what that was about. I've never have you seen Some Like a Hot?
Oh yes, that I haven't. I've seen it a couple of times, and every time I see it, it holds up really well, and it is funny, because there are there are some movies, I like older movies, but there are some 40s and 50s movies that don't really hold up very well. Three Coins in the Fountain, I'm Looking at You, I love that song by Frank Sinatra, but the movie, it's about an hour too long. But that one, it really holds up well, and the ending joke is just hilarious.
I need to see it. I like older I just like comedy in general. But I don't even know where to find Some Like It Hot. I feel like,
Amazon Prime. That's either on Amazon Prime or Netflix. I know it was on one of those platforms a couple of months ago, because I remember watching it not long after I moved in here. Because they were talking about it on some other podcast I was listening to, and I realized, I haven't seen that movie in a while. And I went and watched it because it was available. But you can probably find it. You can definitely find it on there. And if not, you can rent it from Amazon.
Yeah. I need to, because I feel like people underestimate how funny and like strategically performative Marilyn Monroe was.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
I've seen some scenes of films throughout quarantine on of her performing, and they're just really just amazing.
And then we mentioned the chair that with his guitar on it. Also, you see that in the video. And then there is the version from Wogan on December 16th, 1991, where she's strumming the ukulele a lot like in the video. That version, yeah, I've seen as well. It's very much a lot like the filmed music video. I think it's more mm-hmm. widely seen, too.
Well, I remember seeing the music video on YouTube before Kate Bush officially released it.
Me too.
So I remember seeing both versions. One thing that I just thought about was the backup vocals mm-hmm. of this song. It's not Kate solely doing it this time, and I think that was like with the Central World, she stopped. I might be wrong, but she stopped really relying on herself solely for backup vocals like she did in Hounds of Love.
Actually, I do think that it's... I'm looking at the credits of the song, and they don't mention the trio Bulgarka, so I think that the background vocals in her version of the song are actually her.
No, but there are... In the music video, there are... other women singing. Not true, Bulgarka, who are amazing.
Oh.
And I'm excited to talk about with Rocket's Tale. That song. I do just trying to tap my the song stuck in my head. I do think it's her doing backups. I might be wrong, but do you think she started using more people to do backup vocals around this time?
Other than when she's singing with the trio Bulgarka, I don't think so. Or unless she has Patty okay. singing with her way in the background. Like on, I think he was on the background on Love and Anger. Let me just check.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, Kiv, backing vocals, Kate and Patty Bush. No, it's, other than the couple of songs on The Sensual World and The Red Shoes, where she has the trio singing with her, she continues to use herself as her own backing vocalist, which is just, just freaking amazing the way that she does
it's
that.
It's amazing. Now I have to just re-listen. I mean, don't get me wrong, both albums, both Sensual World and Red Shoes are albums I've listened to it just time after time after time, but now I have to do that even more. Red Shoes is still one of my favorite Kate Bush albums, and I know that is not a common opinion.
Oh yes, yeah. So chart performances. This went to number 2 in Australia, number 45 in France, 36 in Germany, the Irish took it to 17, the Dutch liked it a little less than the Irish, but they brought it to 22, the Swiss liked it a tiny bit more, they brought it to 20, and the British went, hey, this is pretty cool, we'll give her another top 20 hit at number 12.
Obviously, where are we?
Please, we all know that Kate Bush doesn't give a fuck about America.
a nation famed for its love of musicians like Kate Bush. When
I know. Although it says here, this is actually from Kate Bush Encyclopedia, It said that it became a hit in the UK and the USA, but it didn't. If it was released here as a single, it didn't chart.
Something that would chart on college rock, but then again, it's not really college rock.
Although, like, what's interesting at this time, and that I mentioned it during, I think I mentioned it in the Love and Anger episode. If I didn't, I need to make sure I punch that in. That Love and Anger actually charted really well on the college radio charts.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were trying to push Kate to the college market, which is an interesting contrast to how she's seen in the UK, where it's my understanding that in the UK she was seen as a pop artist, like somebody on top 40.
Really?
And then, yeah, but then you come over here and, well, we're just going to stick her on the college radio chart.
Yeah, I feel, yeah, because people, and, like, she doesn't fit the standards of a pop musician in America, and people mm-hmm. don't really know how to categorize her in general. But I love college rock.
I do, too. That's where all the really cool and interesting stuff is. I mean, hell, I still listen to that stuff even in 2020, so... Okay. Thank you so much for being on to talk about Rocket Man today. Always great to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, I always love being on the show.
And it's always cool to talk to you. Yay! More young people who like K-pop. Yay! For listening to this week's episode of Strange Phenomena, the music of Kate Bush. Well, we have now come back down to earth, and we're going to be starting the last three episodes of the Sensual World season. So next week, we're going to start the collaborations episodes. So these are songs that Kate Bush sang on that were written by other people, and she was brought in to help. There are going to be three of them we're going to talk about this season, and the next one coming up is a song that she recorded for the background of a pop duo's album track that was also later released as a single, The King Is Dead by the pop duo Go West. So that's what's coming next week. In the meantime, if you're enjoying what I'm doing, please feel free to follow me on Twitter at StrangeKateCast, on Facebook, facebook.com/KateBushPodcast, and also I'm on Patreon, patreon.com/KateBushPodcast. There's also a hotline, 1-757-349-6369, so you can leave a message about your favorite Kate Bush song and it could be played on a future episode. Also, I'm going to be looking for people to do Red Shoes episodes. We're going to start recording those this year in 2022, so feel free to hit me up on any of those socials. Also, real quick, want to give a shout out to the Kate Bush subreddit and also the Discord. It's been a lot of fun. I've just joined a couple of days ago, and it's been so much fun chatting with other Kate Bush fans on there. So, with all that said, we'll see everybody next time for The King Is Dead. Bye!
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.